Welcome to the Tech Today podcast. It's your host, John Maeda. I know you guys like when I keep it brief, so I will keep today's episode brief, although I do want to do a teach-in at some point around fiscal policy, monetary policy, and how that plays into the various things you may see in the headlines, the news headlines. It would be a follow-up to our 2021 book. Back in April of 2021, we published a book entitled Stagflation is Imminent. And we're living it, frankly. The marks of a stagflationary economy are one where you have muted GDP growth, which we do. And I believe it's more muted than you see in the reported real GDP figures, because I believe the government understates the GDP deflator, which is another way of saying the government understates the impact of price inflation. And if the government was serious about calculating true inflation, and if you subtracted that number from nominal GDP, you would see that real GDP is flat to down, and that's been the case since 2022. So a stagflationary economy marked by muted GDP growth, high debt. The country has $34.6 trillion in treasury debt, not to mention sort of the unfunded liabilities around Social Security and things of that nature. In elevated prices, you know, we have all those three things. So it is a stagflationary economy. And what I wrote about today, because I feel like CPI, which numbers were published this morning, at this juncture, it's less about sort of the month-to-month increase the year-over-year increase or decrease. And it's a function of the conversation ought to be around price levels. Because that's what's having an impact on the economy. Not so much price increases. Price increases have abated. Even if the government, the BLS, published true inflation, you would see that the rate of increase has abated versus the high of summer 2022. But price increases have created such a dramatic effect in terms of the overall price level that it's the price level that's doing the damage. So you could read the article we published today at your leisure. And I'm going to sort of end with what I say in the article. Here are your CPI figures, which can be found at bls.gov. If you haven't seen this before, and you can drill down on various categories and see what's driving numbers in one direction or another. I'm not a fan of CPI because, as I've written extensively, the figure is not calculated the way it used to be calculated 30 years ago when we compared apples to apples. CPI was an apples to apples comparison 30 years ago. Now, if a particular price category sees a spike in terms of a price increase, the government has an incentive to rotate that product or service out for a less expensive one. So, oh, the price of beef has gone up, in particular ribeyes and fillets. So we're going to assume the consumer rotates down to ground beef. So we're going to change the weighting to be less heavily weighted on filet and more heavily weighted on ground beef. So that's how one way in which the government gets cute around the CPI calculation. Here's today's CPI table. And the reason the government does that is, well, sort of threefold. One, you have outgoing payments such as Social Security, which are in part based on CPI. So every year there's a CPI kicker that goes into those payments. So the lower the CPI figure is, the less the federal government has to pay out per person in terms of Social Security payments. It'd be easy if we just scrap Social Security entirely. and let Americans keep the money they earn, but that's a story for another day. So that's one rationale. Another rationale is lower CPI makes the government look good. So, if you think about elections, people point the finger less so at government if the CPI reading comes in lower, whether we'd be talking about the executive branch or Congress or the Fed. Of course, they're all guilty, particularly the Fed, because at the end of the day, it's only the Fed that has the ability to print new dollars and they can't help themselves. But that's what happens when you get a collection of highly liberal bankers in a room and you put them in charge of a central bank, which has been the case with the Fed in sort of perpetuity. I don't want to focus on today's CPI data because the conversation at this point ought to be about price levels. Right? The damage has been done to the economy already in terms of inflation. So if we get inflation to go to zero tomorrow, it's not going to make a difference given the price increases we've had to date. There's sort of the debt level, 34.6 trillion. We can kill that. Fiscal spending year to date, 2.7 trillion. We're running a deficit, by the way, of almost 900 billion year to date. You can see government spending year to date is up 9% over last year. If you haven't seen this before, this is what we spend money on. This is fiscal year to date, beginning October 2023. Social Security almost 600 billion out the door. Health related services 370, national defense 360. Net interest is going higher. Net interest, so on the 34.6 trillion in treasury debt that we have, the average interest rate on that debt in total is 3.22%. And that 3.2% is going higher as we have treasury securities that were issued when interest rates were really low. As those securities mature and are replaced with new treasury issues, those new treasury issues are going to be at the prevailing market rate, which is much higher than it was, obviously, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So that average interest rate is going to go higher. Right, so just think about, can you imagine if we had a 10% interest rate on the treasury debt outstanding, which would be 3.5 trillion. Right, so if we trend toward Fed funds, if we were at a Fed funds rate on 34.6 trillion outstanding, that would be an enormous figure. That figure would be roughly 40% of total federal government tax receipts. I mean, as it is, it's the fourth biggest item, fourth biggest expenditure. And it's just crowding out government spending in other areas, private spending to a degree. If you did the math at the end of last fiscal year, and I calculated that 62 cents of every dollar goes to some sort of a social program. So it's robbing from Peter to pay Paul. Here's the problem, and I'll use Social Security as an example. If I take a dollar from Peter to pay Paul, Social Security dollars, by the time Paul gets that dollar, it's worth a whole hell of a lot less than a dollar because of inflation. So you're throwing good money after bad. The government has no business in taking a portion of people's earnings. And this will be a story that I'll write about probably later this week. But now the Biden administration is pitching taxing corporate buybacks, a 1% tax. I hate buybacks. I believe companies ought to be and reinvesting a lot more of their cash earnings than they do, particularly technology companies. Instead, they use them for buybacks to goose options packages. But the federal government has already taxed companies once. You don't get to then tax those dollars again. And if you read the language the Biden administration put out, they're clearly trying to drive a wedge between the people and private industry. And it's private industry that employs we the people. So the Biden administration and government in general, they're the bad guys. They're the ones spending our money. They're the ones running multi-trillion dollar deficits. Back to CPI. And if you haven't seen this chart before, let's kill that. So when I talk about absolute price levels, this CPI from kind of Q1 2019 through today. And that's why if CPI comes in a bit ahead of expectations, a bit below expectations, the damage is already done. Look at that absolute price increase. Right? That's all goods and services. That's the CPI on an absolute level. Forget about percentage increases or decreases. That's the damage the federal government has done. Enabled and exacerbated by the Federal Reserve. How so? Well, when the federal government spends money, and spends money it doesn't have, it has to plug that deficit. The way it plugs the deficit is Treasury issues Treasury securities to raise new capital. Well, guess what? There's not enough demand between sovereign nations, sovereign buyers, and private capital to absorb those new Treasury issues. So what happens? The Federal Reserve steps in and buys the delta, those auctions that don't sell 100% of the securities to sovereign nations or private buyers. The Fed will step in and mop it up. And the way the Fed does that is it prints money to subsidize the Treasury debt, which it's doing anyway. We ran a Treasury deficit of approximately 2 trillion last year. I think the number was 1.7 trillion. So by definition, the Fed is stepping in and printing money to subsidize Treasury's debt, in addition to the Federal Reserve enabling for fiscal policy. The Fed does its own damage. How does it do that? Well, it prints money to buy securities, right? The old QE. QE, which was supposed to be a one-off back in 2009, coming out of the financial crisis. I hated the policy then. Created great moral hazard. And we've seen corporate behavior change for the worse, if anything, not for the better. But not only was QE not a one-off, it perpetuated right through April, May 2022. End of Q1, let's call it 2022. I forget the exact date. But the Fed spent $120 billion a month buying back are buying $90 billion worth of treasuries and $30 billion worth of mortgage bonds, thereby creating the housing bubble, thereby artificially depressing treasury yields and keeping rates low. So that's how the Fed's policy dilutes the value of the dollar by printing new dollars and thereby driving up prices. You print the new dollar, you devalue those dollars in circulation, thereby driving up prices. And what you're looking at there is bad fiscal and monetary policy. That's why we have this mountain of a price increase in the aggregate. And that's why you have many people using credit cards to pay for daily goods and services. And those people don't really care if CPI went up by X or Y. They just care about the absolute price level. And so what I wrote about today, see if I could toggle back over there, is just that at this juncture, the conversation is less about what the CPI reading was and more about the absolute CPI level. And that if you ask me, I do not believe that the Fed truly wants to get CPI back down to 2%, which is just an arbitrary number they came up with. I mean, if we had a true free economy and a free capital market, free of government intervention and overreach, if you had a true free economy that was highly productive and not saddled with entitlements and things of this nature and government regulation, in a highly productive economy, unit pricing typically comes down. Production goes up, unit production goes up, unit pricing comes down. So you ought to have a pricing environment that's flat to down. Instead, the Fed has convinced the world that 2% is a good thing. 2% annual price increases is a good thing, and that's what we ought to be. Well, I believe the Fed is foolish, but not so foolish that they would accept a 5% CPI or a 10% CPI. But I believe they want a 3 to 4% CPI. And that they're in on the joke, and that Treasury's in on the joke, and the Biden administration's in on the joke, and that the reason why the Fed wants a 3 to 4% CPI is because if you have 3 to 4% price growth, which isn't hyperinflation, but it's pretty aggressive price growth, at least insofar as the United States is concerned. But if you have the price of nominal goods going up 3 to 4%, that means that tax receipts to the federal government will increase 3 to 4%, all else held equal. Meanwhile, if you look at the other side of the ledger, the treasury debt that's outstanding, those interest payments that are owed on each different treasury security, those payments are fixed. They're at a fixed rate. As a security matures and is replaced with a new security at a higher rate, that's one thing. But I'm talking about at a moment in time, each treasury security outstanding has a fixed interest rate. So if those interest rates are fixed, and if the interest payments associated with those treasury securities are fixed, while tax receipts to the government are going up, therefore, income to the government is increasing. The debt expense it owes out the door for those securities at a snapshot in time is fixed, and therefore the federal government and therefore Treasury net net they're making a little bit of money, right? Their revenue is greater than the interest expense, so they can inflate the debt away. If they can grow the tax revenue in the door faster than, the interest expense owed on treasuries. And the problem is the interest expense owed on treasuries in a given year, that's a dynamic number because you have securities that mature and are replaced with new treasury securities, which in this environment are being issued at a higher interest rate than those it is replacing. But that's how the government inflates the debt away. And I think this is going to be the case for a very long time. I mean, we wrote about it in our stagflation book back in April 2021, Stagflation is Imminent. We've written about it a number of times in 2021, 2022, 2023, this year, that it's going to be a long time before we see a 2% CPI. It's going to be really persistent here at 3 to 4%. And I think the Fed is fine with it. I think they're fine with it because it gives them the opportunity to inflate the debt away. And if they keep interest rates at 4 to 5% this year, 3 and change to 4% next year, it makes them look like they are doing something to fight inflation. It helps them keep a cap on inflation that could be really damaging if we saw inflation become an anchor and Next thing you know, we were at 10%, 15%, 20%. With Fed funds at 5%, it's less likely that inflation becomes unanchored. But 5% Fed funds combined with a weak QT program is going to do little to fighting price inflation. If Powell stepped away at the end of his QE program in April 2022, and if I were appointed Fed chair and given the authority to do what I really wanted to do, which would be to, what I really would want to do would be to dismantle the Fed. But let's say I could run policy for that moment. I would get rid of Fed funds, let the market set the rates. If a bank wants to borrow from the discount window, that has to be a case-by-case basis, and we'll set a rate for that bank based on the market, based on the company-specific risks associated with that bank. So that's how we would handle the discount window. But there would be no Fed funds rate. It would be a function of the market setting rates. And what the Federal Reserve would do would be to flex monetary policy as appropriate. So if there was another Great Depression, you want to expand monetary policy to get liquidity into the system and help pull the economy out of a depression. If things run really hot, which isn't going to happen if the central bank isn't printing like crazy, as it did in 2021 and 2022, when it took what M2 from 4.5, 5 trillion to almost 22 trillion. Talk about a printing spike. But steady state, the Fed would simply flex monetary policy slightly. But if I had to undo the mess that Powell did, as I said, I would get rid of Fed funds. And then the real work I would do would be to run a real QT program. So if we were buying 120 billion a month in treasuries and mortgage backs, I'd sell at least 120 billion a month. Matter of fact, I would do more to unwind the damage that's been done. Oh, that may crash the economy, may crash the markets. Great, I get it. We've got to get that excess liquidity out of the system. And the sooner the better. I think if you undid in 1 year the damage that was done over 2 years in terms of the printing that was done over those 2 years and unwound it in a year or so, that would be the way to do it. The pace at which the Fed is doing it now, it would take over a decade to unwind what they've done. And it's not even in their bogey. It's not even in their stated mission to unwind the printing they did from 2020 to 2022. That's not even the goal. So the current QT program is just, it's smoke and mirrors. It's not achieving anything. That's all for now. See you next time.